Well, this evening, the Jewish people opened the Chumash of Vayikra this week, but we are already counting backwards from Purim. Mitzvah Shem is 2 weeks' time. It will be Purim here in Yerushalayim. That gives us two shopping weeks before Purim. So I wanted to take a look this week at Megillas Esther, and next week in Mitzvah Shem, more matters of Purim, per se. And to begin at the beginning, and it's very interesting to note, to begin with a halachic point that is well known to us, that the Megillah has 10 chapters, and the halacha is that if one misses a word, one doesn't fulfill the mitzvah. And that's true even for the first two chapters, and we stress even, that's the halacha, because the first two chapters don't yet seem to be the miracle of Purim. They're almost history or prehistory. They happen years before everything else. And the question is, why is it so important to begin at the beginning? Why do we need to know about Ahasuerus's party? And Haman isn't mentioned until the third perek. The children are ready to go home. Halfway through the second perek, they want the money back. Until Haman comes on the scene in Al HaNisim, when we give the synopsized form of the story, we go straight to Bimei Mordechai VeEsther Bikesh Haman LaShmid LaRog LaAbed. I mean, that's really where the story begins. The first two prokim are pre-story, and the answer to this, which is provided by the Perush Yosef Lekach on Megillas Esther. And Yosef Lekach, who will guide us more or less for the balance of this shiur, was written by Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi. He's the author of the Maase Hashem on the Chumash that we quote from time to time. And his Perush Yosef Lekach on Megillas Esther, in a sense, became the benchmark Perush that other or subsequent Perushim on the Megillah are heavily based on Yosef Lekach. They take their cue from him, they take their principles for him. The Vilna Gaon's Perush Al Derech HaPshat on Megillas Esther is mostly Yosef Lekach, without, very clearly based on the Yosef Lekach. And the Malbim, who of course will always have his unique flavor to add, but the major principles are Yosef Lekach. So he's really the forerunner of a lot of the Yesodos that later Mepharshim develop.
When was he around?
1500s, 1600s. He was a rabbi in Krakow after the Ramah, so it puts him in the 1600s. And the reason why the early prokim, in a sense, are the critical prokim that we can't afford to do without, is because if we didn't have these chapters 1 and 2, we may have grossly underappreciated the miracle of Purim. After all, what happened in Purim, if one could state briefly, we were in trouble, but the good news is Mordechai was on location, Esther was very strategically placed. Between the two of them, they worked it out. Ahasuerus changed his mind, which is the subtotal of the miracle, really, and everything was okay. What we miss is the hashgacha, the divine providence, in arranging that Mordechai would be the right place and the right time, and that Esther would be in the right place and the right time. That maneuvering is really the grand miracle of Purim, because as we will see, it was against the odds, both of them, each one in their own way. And with that background, let us approach, hopefully, with the heightened appreciation, Perek Aleph of Megillas Esther. Well, how does Megillas Esther begin? With a party. Ahasuerus makes a feast. And it's not actually clear in the Pasuk why he makes a feast. It says in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Beis, Bayamim Ahem, Kesheves HaMelech Ahasuerus, as he sits on the throne, Asher B'Shushan Abira, Pasuk Gimel, B'Shnas Sholosh Lamolcho, in the third year of his reign, Asa Mishtel, Choser Avadav, all of a sudden he starts to make a party. Why? Doesn't say. He's been in power for 3 years, but that doesn't sound like a special number. So what's behind this mishteh? And we know a lot goes on there, but what led to it? So Mepharshim tell us, and actually there is a Rishonim speak about this. There's a Radak in Sefer Yeshaya in Perek Yud Gimel, and other sources as well, that as we know, just a bit of context, Ahasuerus, he represents Paras, he represents Persia, and Persia took over from Babel. So Babel had Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar and that, and they were overrun by the Persians. And now the Persians are in charge. But what's interesting to note is that as much as Paras was now in charge, Daryavesh and then Koresh, before we get to Ahasuerus, those earlier kings, they didn't move the center of power. That is to say, Babel had been set up to run the world. There was an infrastructure. And when they came in and took over, so they took over Babel. I mean, Persia is now in charge, but it's running the world from Babel. The Chiddush of Ahasuerus is that he makes the decision to move the center of the world actually to Paras, specifically to Shushan, for reasons that we will see. Home rule. He finally brought the center of operations into Paras itself, specifically to Shushan. And this we need to appreciate this background, and that's why he makes the feast. He makes the feast, in a sense, in order to ingratiate himself and in order to establish himself in the new place. So what's Bishano Shalosh Lamalcho? See, Bayami Mahim and Pasuk Beis, in those days, Kesheves HaMelech Ahasuerus HaKise Mechusu Asher B'Shushan Abira. That's the Chiddush of Pasuk Beis, is that the royal throne is now in Shushan, because until now, it's been in Babel. And this happened in the third year of his reign, and thus he makes the party. And the party lasts for a long time. That's 180 days, which is a long time. And it's for the nobility. And the point of the party is that everyone should know and get it ingrained into their system that Shushan is now the point to which they come and from which they go. It's established as the center. And this, for us, is the first point of Hashgacha. And here we are, and we all know that Mordechai was very conveniently on location. He heard what he had to hear. He surmised what he needed to surmise, and then he acted. The point is, when we say that Mordechai was on location, it's much more correct to say that location was on Mordechai. That is to say, he was right next to the capital city. The capital city relocated next to him. And that's the first point. Had things remained the way they had been until now, so the corridors of power would have been hundreds of miles away. And what's interesting is, according to the Yosef Lekach, this is a chiddush. It's slightly subtle. But the first of the psukim that we say aloud, and there's four psukim that the Kahal says aloud, Ish Yehudi Hayab B'Shushan Abira Ushmo Mordechai. There was a Jew in the capital city. Anyone who knows politics knows that's not much of a chiddush. Only one? Ish Yehudi, it sounds like a chiddush that there was a Jew there. But as we know, there's two ways for the pasuk to describe a past event. Either with a vav, like the Megillah begins, Vayehi, and it was, so, or the word Haya. The difference between them is that Vayehi is, you know, then this happened, and Haya is the past perfect. It had already happened. That's the point of the pasuk. As if to say, before any of this, before the center of the world arrived in Shushan, Ishudi Hayabashusha, Mordechai was there already. And the furniture of the world was rearranged in order to be right next to him. So this is the background to the party. This is now the capital city, Shushan Abira. And first you have the 180-day party. And then, just for everyone who wasn't invited to the first one, you have this party for 7 days for everyone in Shushan. And again, limikatan va'ad gadol, from big to small, doesn't matter who you are, because you should take pride in the fact that you are part of the capital city. That again emphasizes and establishes Shushan as the new capital. Now, this party lasts for 7 days, and on the seventh day, As it says in Pasuk Yud, Bayom HaShvi'i, Ketov Lev HaMelech BaYayin, so the seventh day, the king's heart is very happy with wine, and we can appreciate he's been practicing for the first 6 days, but by day seven, he's got it down to a fine art. And he sends his servants, Amar Limuhuman, Bisusah, Chavarnah, Biksav, Avaksah, Zesav, Chakas, these seven sarisim, these seven servants, Pasuk Yud Aleph Lahavi es Vashti Hamalka Lefnei HaMelech Beches HaMalchus, to bring Vashti to the party. But she doesn't want to come. Pasuk Yud Beis Vatima Ein Hamalka Vashti Lavo B'Dvar HaMelech. She's not interested. She refuses. Asher B'Yad HaSarisim Vayiksof HaMelech Ma'od V'Chamasa Bar Rabo. And Nachashverosh is furious, and now the whole question, what to do now? It's very interesting to note, if we look closely at the psukim, and this is a trademark of the Yosef Lekach, and again after him the Malbim, and those who follow in this way. Who is Vashti? It's interesting that she's referred to slightly differently in Pasuk Yud Aleph and in Pasuk Yud Beis. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, Lehavi es Vashti Hamalka lefnei HaMelech b'kes HaMalchus. So she is called Vashti Amalka. Vashti the queen? Okay, that's pretty much, that's her name and that's her position. In Pasuk Yud Beis, it says, Vatimoein Hamalka Vashti, Lavo B'dvar HaMelech. Queen Vashti doesn't want to come. The shaila is, what if there is, what is the difference between Vashti Hamalka and Hamalka Vashti? I mean, how many people are we talking about? It's the same person. We should also note that as much as the Pasuk tells us that Achashverosh was very angry, it actually says it in two different ways. The end of Pasuk Yud Beis, I'm familiar with the Psukim. Vayiktsov HaMelech Ma'od, the king was very angry, V'chamasa Barabo, and his anger burnt within him. Well, which anger? He was already angry. So why does the Pasuk say the same thing in two different ways? We should note that the Gemara tells us, that the Gemara in Megillah, of course, that when Vashti refused to come to Achashverosh's feast, she didn't just say no. She added an insult to boot. She reminded him that he didn't always come from such great yichus, such great pedigree. Originally, he worked in the stables in her grandfather's house. He worked his way up to the top, which is a euphemism for killed his way up to the top. So now he's the king, but he has a very humble origins. And therefore, the full nusach of Vashti's refusal is, my grandfather's stable boy isn't going to tell me what to do. Where do we see that in the psukim? The pasuk just says she refused. We don't have any notion of the subtext or the accompanying insult. What's that all about? So Yosef Lekach explains. In fact, Achashverosh and Vashti's relationship is very interesting. Each one, in a sense, has something that the other doesn't. Achashverosh, as we mentioned, he doesn't have much of a background. He doesn't have any noble ancestry. But he is in power. I mean, he's the new money. He is in power now. Okay, so he has a present, but he doesn't have a past. Vashti is kind of the opposite. She has blue blood, but the kingdom of Bavel isn't much of a going concern anymore. So she has yichus, but it was really activated by Achashverosh. So now the question is, who is the main personality here? Who is the significant figure? Is it Achashverosh who has the power, or Vashti who has the royalty? That's the shaila. And in fact, this question, one could say, is a machlokus rishonim, specifically between Achashverosh and Vashti. For Achashverosh, he says, without me, you'd be nothing, you'd be history, and I'm really the ikker here. Vashti says, without my name, no one would pay any attention to you. I'm the one who gives you credibility. I'm the one who opens doors for you. So this is the tension that exists within that relationship. And part of the beginning of the Megillah is Ahasuerus looking to establish firmly that he is the Iker here, and Vashti is not. Indeed, the Malbim says that's what's behind Ahasuerus's move to Shushan. As long as the capital is in Bavel, as long as he continues to work in her grandfather's office, so he'll always be in the shadow, really, of Bavel. He'll always be the hired help, so to speak. And therefore, he's looking to cut ties with Bavel, to come to a completely new setting, that is to say, his home territory, where on the contrary, Vashti will be the guest. But this is home for him. And all of that is to make it's a new regime, it's a new world order, and to unequivocally establish that Ahasuerus is the Iker here. In fact, if we're medaktik, as the Malbim is, if we take a look at the guest list of this original party, which is in Pasuk Gimel, we'll see something fascinating. It says, Bishnas Shalosh Lemalcho, in the third year of his reign, Asa Mishteh Lechol Sarav Va'avadav. So we should note who comes to this party. First mentioned are his officers, his servants. Who else? Chel Parasu Madai, the army of Persia, Hapartamim Visarei HaMedinos Lefanav, and the officials and the nobles of all of the countries Lefanav, before him. What does that mean, before him? In what way are they before him? Says Malbim, this is how Ahasuerus, in a sense, is establishing the new hierarchy. It's very interesting. It's a new pecking order, whereby he is the king, he is in Shushan, he's making a feast. Who gets invited? Well, who gets invited first? His people. They're the top of the list. And it doesn't make a difference how noble they are. Whether it's Sarav, his officers, whether it's Avadav, his servants. The moral of the story is Ahasuerus' servants will be invited before any other officer of another state or country. Because it's all about Shushan now. And thus you have firstly his own people, his officers, his servants, Chel Parasu Madai, his army, and at the last group on the list, who used to be the most important, are now the Haftorah. Sarei HaMedinos Lefanav. Lefanav means all of those officials that came before him. He hasn't forgot them, but he's almost forgotten them. As if to say, you're also invited. You can also join in the party that we are having. But it's a fundamental reshuffle. It's an upheaval, whereby the only people that count now are the people of Shushan. And everybody else can join in if they want. They're welcome if they behave. So it's interesting how the order of the invitations is already sending out a message. Now, this gives us much deeper insight into another party that's going on exactly the same time, which is referred to in Pasuk Tes. Gam Vashti Hamalka Osusa Mishtei Nashim. Vashti also makes a party. I think we would have missed perhaps the sting of what's going on here. Gam Vashti Hamalka Osusa Mishtei Nashim doesn't mean that she's very obligingly entertaining all the women folk while he's having the real party. But rather, Gam, it's there's tension here. There's competition. He's making a party for the men, and Vashti isn't just doing nothing, and she's not just being an accessory to his party. Gam, you're making a mishteh. I can also make a mishteh. You make for the men, I'll make for the women. It's a competing feast. And it's very interesting to note that the pasuk only tells us one piece of information about this party, namely, where was it? Gam Vashti Amalka, Osusa Mishtei Nashim, where did she make this Mishteh? Beis Hamalchus, Asher LaMelech Ahasuerus, in Ahasuerus' royal palace. What's the point of that? We know that Ahasuerus' feast took place in the courtyard and in the garden. In other words, he was very expansive. He left the house, and it took place outdoors. That was a mistake, because he left the palace unattended. The palace is really where the power is. If one is secure in their power, you can go, you can expand outwards. But if there's issues at home, it doesn't do to leave the palace unattended. Because when he went out, Vashti went in. He'd actually been locked out of his house. And she's in the palace. And her message is, you can stay in the garden, and we, in the meanwhile, will be in the palace. That represents the actual power. So, on the one hand, everyone's having a good time for these 7 days, but Ahasuerus and Vashti, they're very conscious of each other in terms of what each party represents. And it's an uneasy kind of coexistence for these 7 days, until before the final day of the feast, Ahasuerus will need to make a statement. He will need to demonstrate exactly who is really in power and who is along with them. And that's what's behind Ahasuerus making a point of calling for Vashti. In other words, she will come to me. When I say, come to the party, she will obey. And interestingly, he says the reason why he wants to invite Vashti into the party is to show everyone how beautiful she is, ki tovas marehi. What he's doing is he is downplaying any other quality that she has. Namely, as if to say, she looks nice, so I married her. There isn't really much else to say about her, which of course is very far from the truth. He married her because she's royalty. But he's looking to downplay that, to sideline that. So everyone will see she looks nice. I'll say, okay, I guess we can see what Ahasuerus saw in her, and hopefully she'll behave. That's why when he calls her in Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, Lehavi es Vashti Hamalka lefnei Hamelech. She's called Vashti Hamalka. That is to say, first comes her name, and then comes her position. Because that's really what Ahasuerus is saying to her. That she's not really a queen. Her name is Vashti. That's who she is. She became a queen. That's thanks to him. Vashti became the Malka by marrying him. But without him, she wouldn't be anything. Okay. So the order of the terms here is decisive. Now, Vashti refuses, but she doesn't just refuse. The Pasuk says, Pasuk Yud Beis, Vatima'ein Hamalka Vashti. She didn't just say no. She said, firstly, no, and secondly, don't call me Vashti Hamalka. That's not true. I'm Hamalka Vashti, meaning I was royalty before I was born. That's a dominant aspect of my personality, and it's present in our relationship. So I didn't just become a Malka when I married you. I was a Malka, I was born into Malchus, and you married into Malchus. So the question as to how to even refer to Vashti, is she Vashti or Malka, or Malka Vashti, that's really part of the power struggle. And that's why the Gemara says that when she said no, it wasn't just that she's refusing, but rather that she reminded him of his humble origins. Right? The remez is in the fact that she flips the terms round. Hamalka Vashti, as if to say, I'm royalty, you're nothing, you're the stable boy. It turns out, therefore, that by the time these sarisim come back with Vashti's message, there are really two aspects to it now. Number one, she's refused to turn up. And number two, she's insulted Ahasuerus regardless. She didn't just say no, she said no, stable boy. Now, the difference between these two is who at Ahasuerus's party knows anything about what's going on? Everyone's expecting Vashti to turn up, and that was a very confidently made announcement. So when she doesn't turn up, everybody sees that she's somehow disobeyed. The insult which accompanied her refusal to say that you're nothing without me, no one knows about that. I mean, she said that to the Sarisim, they conveyed it to the king. They didn't announce that publicly. Which means Achashverosh really has to deal with two things. Number one, a public humiliation in the sense that everybody was expecting Vashti, and she hasn't arrived. And number two, that personal message that came through the Sarisim to remind him that she's the queen and he's not. And that's why when he reacts with anger, the Pasuk actually describes two types of anger. On the one hand, Vayiktsov HaMelech Ma'od, and on the other hand, V'chamasa Bar Abor. What's the difference between Ketzef and Chema? Well, Ketzef, we know in all of its other usages, they're all really connected. I mean, Ketzef is frost, because Ketzef is anger that's noticeable and visible. When the person starts frothing, then you know that they're angry. And that corresponds to the first insult, namely just the very fact that she disobeyed. That's, I mean, everyone can see Achashverosh is agitated, he was expecting her, and everyone knew that, and that's not a secret. So he's visibly upset about that. But there's something else that he's not visibly upset about, because he doesn't want everyone to know what Vashti said, but he knows what she said. And with regards to her insult, communicated through these sarisim, it says, V'chamoso ba'arapo. His anger burned within him. That was just a further seething anger in terms of that insult. So it's done. She said no. And she insulted him. So now the question is, what to do? So Achashverosh begins to consult. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomer HaMelech LaChachamim Yodei Ha'itim Kichen VaHaMelech Lefnei Kol Yodei Das Vadin. So he talks to his people. It's interesting to note and question, who are these people? I mean, the first people that he speaks to, or who are they called? They're called Chachamim, wise men, Yodei Ha'itim, people who know the times. Kichein Dvar Melech Lefnei Kol Yodei Das Vadin, people who know constitution, law. How many different qualities are they? What is Yodei Ha'itim? What is Yodei Das Vadin? And how many people is Achashverosh talking to? Then, in Pasuk Yud Dalet, it gives us names. V'hakarei Velav, who is close to him, these seven people, Karshana, Shesar, Admasa, Tarshish, Meres, Masan, Amubuchan, who are they? Shivas, Sarei, Parasim, Adai, officers of Paras, Ro'opne, Amelech, they see the king, Hayosh, Mershona, Bamachus, they sit first in the Malchus. These are different qualities again. We have about seven different qualifications here. Chachamim, Yodei Ha'itim, Yodei Das Vadin, Sarei Parasim Adai, Ro'opne HaMelech, Yosh Mishena Bamachus. I mean, how many qualities do they need in order to help him out? So to begin to try and make Seder in these psukim to understand exactly what Achashverosh is doing. Says Yosef Lekach, generally speaking, if a person has a grievance, a legal issue, they turn to legal advice. So the question should be just referred to Yodei Das Vadin. Das Vadin is the constitution, it's the law, they know what's right and what's wrong, and they'll see him through. The problem is, if someone's in a position of power like Achashverosh, the legal solution is not always the right solution. And the reason is, sometimes there may be overriding concerns, political concerns, that whereas in dry terms or in abstract terms, the legal solution would be very clear, but it may not be the most advisable way, given the circumstances, given the times. And therefore, Pasuk Yud Gimel reads as follows. Vayomer HaMelech, who does Achashverosh talk to? L'chachamim Yodei Ha'itim. The people that he consults with first are his wise men, people who know the times. Literally, that is to say, they know the climate, right? They know the tensions of the times, the concerns, the factors. Kichein Dvar HaMelech, because that's what a king needs to do. Lifnei, before Kol Yodei Das Vadin, before he consults a lawyer, he's got to consult a political advisor. He needs someone who knows the times to even know how to shape the question And there may be certain vetoes that need to happen or certain corners that need to be rounded by the time he gets to the legal side of things. And therefore, the king speaks first to the Yode Ha'iti. Now, what's very interesting to note at this point of the proceedings is that Ahasuerus doesn't want to kill Vashti. In other words, he got himself into a bit of a mess because he overconfidently called for her and she didn't come. And now he's got to get out of it. But he doesn't want to kill Vashti. And the reason why is because deep down, he knows that she's right. Her royalty is the reason that he married her. He does need that. He doesn't want to get rid of it. He would never say that to her. But it is true. So the killing her is not the answer to all of his problems at all. It may delete one of his greatest assets. In fact, the Al-Sheikh says, who also has a wonderful commentary on Megillas Esther, it says, "Vayiktzof ha-melech ma'od," when she refused, he was angry. Who's he angry at? Vashti. And b'chamaso ba'arabo, that he was also furious at himself. Ba'arabo, says the Al-Sheikh, doesn't mean it burned within him, it means it burned about him. B'chamaso ba'arabo, he's saying, how could I have gotten into this situation? What did I do? How am I going to get out of it without losing face, but without losing Vashti? And we can see this, by the way, from the way that the question is presented. In Pasuk Tesvav, Kedas mal asos b'malka Vashti. What to do with Queen Vashti? So there's two points here. Interestingly, this is Ahasuerus talking, and he calls her Hamalka Vashti. I mean, that's their machlokas the whole time. He says, "You're Vashti Hamalka, you're Vashti, I made you into a queen." She says, "No, I'm Hamalka Vashti, I was always a queen, did you a favor by marrying you." And he'll never call her Hamalka Vashti to her face, that's giving in. But to his advisors, he's got to say it because it's really true. What should we do with Hamalka Vashti? She is royalty. And I do need her. And that's why, again, every letter makes a difference. He says, Kedas mal asos ba'malka Vashti. What shall we do with Vashti? In other words, she's still got to be in play. We just got to do something with her. Otherwise, it would have been what to do to Vashti. Mal asos la'malka Vashti. He doesn't want to do anything to her. He wants to do something with her because he still needs her. And that's why, says Yosef Lekach, the kaf, in the beginning of the word kedas, it's a very telling letter because the kaf is approximate. Kachamesh dakot. Could be 5 minutes, but if it's 2 hours later, don't complain because that's what the kaf does. So kedas, das is law. And kedas is something like the law. They need something that will pass as a legal solution, but he doesn't want it to be the law itself. Something law-like that will look respectable when we write the history of this, but she's got to be back in play. And moreover, it says, Kedas mal asos b'malka Vashti. What should we do with Vashti? Ala shelo osso es ma'amar ha-melech Ahasuerus b'yad ha-sarisim. You see how Ahasuerus, he's downplaying her wrongdoing. It says that she refused to come bidvar hamelech. Dvar has a certain firmness to it. Ma'amar, he does, as he's retelling the story, Ma'amar, I just said, do you want to come over? And she was busy. He downgrades it to a much milder form of suggestion. I just thought maybe she'd be bored at her party, so maybe she'd come to our party. Didn't work out. What are you going to do? And then he says, "Biyata sarisim." She would never refuse me to my face. But you know, sarisim, she's a bit highly strung that way. She doesn't want to talk to sarisim. Who, you know, maybe she was waiting for me to come and get her. So all of this is cushioning her refusal. They were low level people that went for her, and it wasn't that important anyway. And So let's work it out. Why is it important to know that Ahasuerus doesn't want to kill Vashti? The more we understand how much he didn't want to kill her, the more we appreciate what had to happen in order to make him do so, in order to bring in play the second dominant personality of Megillas Esther, and that is Esther herself. If we don't appreciate that Esther, the place should never have been vacant, leaving aside Perek Beis, how against all odds Esther becomes the queen, there shouldn't have been that space available. Vashti should never have been killed, but she was. And what's amazing is, the one who prevails upon him to kill Vashti, even though he doesn't really want to, is Memuchan. And Memuchan, as we know, is Haman. So two things are going on, which is interesting. Firstly, and these are just, one really needs to digest these points. The salvation of the Jewish people through the death of Vashti, etc., is being arranged while the Jewish people are getting themselves into trouble. That is to say, the cause of the problem is the fact that they went to Ahasuerus' feast. While they are getting themselves, incriminating themselves more and more through their behavior, at that very feast, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is already arranging that when the time comes and they get themselves together, already from now, the way back will have been paved for them. Vashti's place is being vacated. When the time comes, Esther will be ready. Why is Memuchan so, does he feel so strongly about this? He's going to make a very impassioned plea to Ahasuerus, and if she disobeys you, everyone's wife will disobey them, and there'll be anarchy in the kingdom. The Medrash says, actually, that Haman had his own Shalom Bayis issues. His wife Zeresh, not hard to imagine, I mean, they got married in the first place, she didn't listen to anything that he said, and he was looking to put her in her place by using Vashti as an example. So that's kind of the background. He's projecting a lot of his own issues onto Ahasuerus. He's making a national crisis out of really a domestic misery. And there's a further point. Again, if we look at the psukim closely, not only is it a chiddush that Memuchan, otherwise known as Haman, speaks against everyone else, he goes against the tide, we also need to appreciate that Memuchan wasn't even consulted. He was never even asked for his opinion. What do we mean by that? We mentioned before that in Pasuk Yud Gimel, we have two groups of people. Number one are called Chachomim Yodei Ha'itim. They are wise men, they know the times, they know the political, which way the winds are blowing. And they will be consulted first. Who will be consulted next? Yodei Das Vadin. When they've got the political situation packaged, they'll present it to the legal side of things. Those two groups are mentioned in Pasuk Yud Gimel. And what about Pasuk Yud Dalet? Another group of seven people. Who are they again? Well, Karshina, Shesar, etc. and so forth. Meres, Marsanam, and Muchan. And who are they? Are they Yodei Ha'itim? Are they Yodei Das Vadin? They're none of the above. Their role is described in Pasuk Yud Dalet. They are Sarei Paras Amadai, noblemen of Paras. Roei Pnei HaMelech, they see the king. Hayosh Mishen HaMalchus, they sit in the first row of the Malchus. That is to say, these seven people mentioned in Pasuk Yud Dalet are the king's entourage. It doesn't do for the king, he can never be alone. So he's surrounded by noble people. And what is their job? To surround him. The way that they are described, they are basically useless. They are noble furniture. They're Ro'ei Pnei HaMelech. They're always looking at the king. Yoshim Rishen of Amalchus, they're always there, right near him. And that is the sum total of their qualifications. They're not Yodei Ha'itim. They're not Yodei Das Vadin. But they're always around. But no one ever talks to them, because they're not really good for anything. And Memuchan is the junior of this final group. He is the last on the list of people that no one is really interested in talking to. And he's the first one that talks. And that's a further chiddush. Achashverosh probably didn't know where that voice was coming from originally. Their job is not to talk, their job is to look and to sit. And that's why it says in Pasuk Tetzayin, Vayome Mamuchan Lifnei HaMelech Vasar. He spoke before anybody else. And the Pasuk says, Vayomer Mamuchan. Achashverosh has asked the question, what shall we do? If someone asks a question, then whoever speaks, it should say, Vaya'an Mamuchan. He answered. The reason why it doesn't say he answered is because Achashverosh asked the question, but he didn't ask him. The question was never addressed to him, so his comments are literally out of the blue. And he will single-handedly convince Achashverosh to kill Vashti. And when he does that, he will be the one that vacates Vashti's place for Esther, who will ultimately be his undoing. That's why the Pasuk says there's many wheels going on here in Megillas Esther, but he's called Memuchan. Why is he called Memuchan? Says the Gemara, Muchan Aparonus. He's prepared for disaster. And what that means here is that he is currently preparing his disaster. I mean, he is vacating the spot for the one that will destroy him right now. Unbeknownst to him, of course. Now, what's his claim? So to understand specifically, because he has, let's say, two or three psukim, he goes on about it. So to remind ourselves that there are two spheres that exist here within these parties. Achashverosh made a party for everyone. As we know, these last 7 days, Lemikaton Va'ad Gadol, anyone who was in Shushan was invited to Achashverosh's party, Shushan Abir. Vashti's party was only for the nobility. And that's also, in a sense, that's part of her shtech to Achashverosh, because he's being magnanimous and inviting everyone, right? The high to the low, and Vashti is saying, well, to each their own. If you want to take care of the proletariat, so I will, in the meanwhile, entertain the nobility. And I think we've all, motza mines mino, everyone has found their natural company here. So, in terms of the men folk, everyone is there, from all strata, from all echelons of society. In terms of the women, it's specifically the soros. Now, remember, the men only know half the story. They only know that Vashti was meant to turn up, and she didn't show. That's all they know. They don't know what she said, because that was very surreptitiously communicated to Achashverosh, and it wasn't publicized. But of course, whoever was at the women's party knows, because Vashti didn't hide it. I mean, she said it out loud. I'm not coming. He's the stable boy. Whoever was at Vashti's party knows. So the soros, right, the nobility amongst the women, they know more, actually, than any of the men do. As the party ends and the crowds disperse and each one will find their spouse, information will be shared. And now, let's have a look at what Memuchan says. In Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ki yetzei dvar hamalka al kohanoshim. We have to pay very close attention to the use of the masculine and the feminine here. They, the nun, the final nun, they will belittle their husbands, they'll despise their husbands. Be'omrom now shifts to the masculine. The point is that what everyone will know soon enough will come from the men, because all the men were there. So they'll go home, their wives have been waiting, right? The common man, his wife is waiting at home. No, what happened at the... Well, you'll never guess what happened. Well, what do you know? Vashti was meant to turn up, she didn't turn up. That's all he knows. That's already bad enough. Which is, Be'omrom, right? The men will say, what will they say? They'll say what they know. Hamelech Achashverosh Amar Lavias Vashti Hamalka Lefonav Velova. He told her to come, she didn't come. That's what the men know. But it won't only be the men telling the women, because in terms of the broader sector, the men will tell the women what they know. But in terms of the nobility, the women will actually have news for the men. The men will say, did you know Vashti was meant to turn? And their wives will say, that's nothing. You only know the half of it. Pasuk Yud Ches, Vahayom Hazeh, but this very day, when the Sarim and the Saras, they get together and they compare notes, Tomar Nosaros Parasu Madai, the Saros, Asher Shom'u Es Devar HaMalka, they heard what she said. L'chol Sarei HaMelech, they'll tell that over to the Sarei HaMelech, Uchidai Bizayon V'Kotzef. And there'll be great Bizayon, and again, anger, interestingly. Where will there be Zion for? It's be Zion for you. It will be Zion for the husbands. Because every wife is thinking, well, if Vashti can do that to Achashverosh, so I can do it to him. It's a kal v'chomer. It's actually a chomer v'kal. Because if she got away with it for the king, and my husband's not the king, I should definitely be able to get away with it. So it's going to be Zion. And moreover, and here Haman touches a nerve, v'katzef. Katzef is anger. Who's going to be angry? Says Haman. They'll all be angry at you. But you didn't take a stand. You will cause widespread misery. No husband will feel safe in his own home anymore. And it'll be because of you. They'll be upset and they'll be angry at you. This whole party was about ingratiating yourself with the masses and establishing yourself as the new leader. You want all of them to be furious with you? That's a difficult type of pressure for Ahasuerus to handle. Okay. The question is, what to do? So here, Haman has a very sinister solution. And it's not the last time this has happened. Namely, to take a situation, to remove the truth, to reinsert a much more convenient story, and to spread it. All that people know are the facts. Vashti, for some reason, she was meant to come to Achashverosh's feast, and she didn't. That's all. That's what most people know. If you can start sending out this message with, you know, with many different outlets as you can, so what's the message? Imal haMelech Tov Yetzid v'Malchus Mufan v'Kaseh b'Daseif Rasa Madar b'Lo Yavor Asher Lo Sovu Vashti Lefnei haMelech. What's the law? The law is Vashti is banned from Achashverosh's feast. Make sure that comes out before the feast is over. People will remember the ban. What Haman is doing is he's taking Vashti's refusal and turning it into a prohibition against her attending the feast. And that's going to be the party line from now on. Anyone who's asked, and let everybody know about it, everyone now leaves with new information. For some reason, Vashti must have done something terribly wrong. You know, she didn't turn up at the party. Yes, she wasn't allowed to, so she must have really fallen from the king's favor, and we'll never hear from her again. And the truth will dissolve in the fullness of time. The women folk are a miut. They'll be outvoted by their husbands. The common women folk don't know anything anyway. Numbers are on our side. Spin the story, and you'll find your way out. And Achashverosh likes it. He goes for it. Now, one key fundamental point, really, that needs to be mentioned, because it will accompany us throughout the Megillah. What was it specifically that Achashverosh found so appealing? Not only was it a good exit, but it's nonetheless, it's quite a risk for Memuchan to take. If Achashverosh doesn't want to kill Vashti, then to convince him to kill her, you may be asking for trouble. Why would Haman want to convince Achashverosh to do something that he doesn't want to do? So Haman had his own problems, as we mentioned, but how does he bait Achashverosh this way? The answer, says Yosef Lekach, is a two-word formula that's mentioned in Pasuk Yotes. Imal haMelech Tov, if the king likes it, Yetzei Dvar Malchus Milefanov, let a royal decree, a royal matter, go forward from him. What's the significance of these words? We see from earlier in the parak, I mean, just this one episode happened, and before you know it, Achashverosh is surrounded by teams of people who he starts consulting. What should I do? Who does he talk to? He's got teams lined up, and there's other people that are there just because they're there. There's Yodei Ha'itim, and there's Yodei Dasvadin, and these are Sarpras U'Madai. He's surrounded by committees. Achashverosh doesn't seem to be able to do much by himself at all. After all, here's Vashti. Shouldn't it be a clear-cut thing? Apparently, no. Ahasuerus is somehow he's strapped by all these. He can't really do anything by himself. And Haman offers him a line and says, listen, legal committees, all well and good, but there has to be a type of situation where you do not need to consult with them. Namely, if first and foremost the matter relates to you, if it's a royal matter, if it's a matter that relates to the king, let the king decide. He's actually offering Ahasuerus his freedom, his independence to exercise his power, and it's very appealing for Ahasuerus, because this whole move from Babel to Shushan is about Ahasuerus asserting his power, and Haman is trying to take that one stage further. Not only are you free from the old money of Babel, you can be even free of your own people. You can do what you want. And that's why, by the way, which is a fascinating diuk, in Pasuk Yutes, if the king likes it, let the matter go out before him, let this be written in the dossier parasumadai, that what? The Vashi shouldn't come to the party. What are dossier parasumadai? Das is a constitution. What is Vashti doing as part of the constitution? The constitution are the principles of law. There are many cases, but those cases don't make it into the constitution. What type of amendment is this? The first amendment to the Persian constitution is, number one, Vashti can't come to Ahasuerus' party. That's hardly an amendment. It's hardly of enduring meaning. I mean, Vashti was killed that day, and that's the end of that. And the constitution was never the same. No. This should have been written, shall we say, in the Divrei Hayomim, which we find, you know, important cases. But why is it in the constitution? The answer, says Yosef Lekach, is because this case changed the constitution. It is an amendment. The amendment brought about by this case is, and this is the first expression of that, the first execution of that, is the king can do what he wants if it relates to him. So the famous case of Vashti versus Ahasuerus, it is tied up with the constitution because it led to that, to this new das, this new principle that called Advar Malchus. And this explains to us, by the way, as we move into Perek Beis. So towards the end of Perek Beis, you have that plot against Ahasuerus' life. Bigtan and Teresh, and it was foiled. So if we read the run of events, and what happens later on, the very next thing mentioned in the Megillah is that Haman is promoted. Bigtan and Teresh try and kill Ahasuerus. Mordechai overhears, he tells Esther, Esther tells Ahasuerus, they're killed, and Achara Dvar Me'ele, Haman gets promoted. How does that become a... Where's the traction? Where's the arithmetic here? How does everything that Mordechai and Esther did for Ahasuerus lead to a promotion for Haman? The answer, says Yosef Lekach, is this was Ahasuerus' first independent use of this new law that Haman gave him called Devar Malchus. If it's just about me, I don't need to consult with anyone. Here's Bigtan and Teresh. What happened? They tried to kill me, says Ahasuerus. So let's kill them. Hang them. You want to talk to anyone? No need. This is Ahasuerus flexing his Devar Malchus muscles. And it feels good. So he's looking now, as after that case, to reward the person who gave him that power. And that's why he promoted Haman after that. Now this actually becomes an important part of Haman's plot against the Jewish people. Because, I mean, really, why does Haman want to kill the Jewish people? Because he's Haman. Why does Ahasuerus go for it? That needs to be explained. It's unlikely that the legal minds, and certainly the political minds, and panels, and groups in the kingdom would have ratified it. And normally something like that, even something less than that, would have to go through all of these groups. So Haman would never be able to push this through to destroy an entire people. Everyone knows that the Jews are they're good for the country. So Haman's plan can only go through, it can only be, have some type of success, if he bypasses all of those groups again. They're just left in the dark. But how can he do that? So what does Haman say? Haman says there's one people They keep everyone's laws except for yours. Dasem shonis mikolam es dasi hamelech einam osim. They don't like you. This is now another expression of Dvar Malchus. They have something against you. They do everybody else's laws, just not yours. And therefore, it's not in your interest to keep them on. So Haman is able to do that based on this amendment, and he's playing on it. And Ahasuerus is still enjoying this concept of Dvar Malchus, so he's looking to take advantage of it. And what's the final turn of the wheel here? In the end, that's what gets Haman killed. Because Haman has a very bad day, that final day, the second party, and it just keeps on getting worse and worse. And it looks like it couldn't get any worse than that, except Charvona pipes up, who just has just been there the whole time, and now he speaks. And he says, there's a tree, Gam Hineya Eitz, because Haman made the tree visible so he could enjoy seeing Mordechai hang from the tree, says Chavona, that's the tree that Mordechai prepared to hang Haman, Haman prepared to hang Mordechai, Asher Diber Tov Al HaMelech. What happened that day? Mordechai was paraded through the street as Ahasuerus' best friend. But Haman still wants to kill him. But Mordechai likes you. And Haman hates Mordechai, even though Mordechai... What does that mean? That means that Haman doesn't like you. Because your greatest ally, Haman is trying to kill. That's personal. Wow. And then what happened? Vayomer HaMelech... It happens very quickly. Teluhu alav. I know what to do in situations like this. I can handle this. Hang him on it. I've done this before. Who allowed you to do this sort of thing? Haman. If those committees had still been in place, Haman probably wouldn't have been killed because he was on those committees and he knew everyone and he would have been able to maneuver. He was the one that had arranged for a certain type of situation to bypass all of them. It's just up to the king. Well, when it was just up to the king, and the king said, hang him, no one could save him. And thus, it's very interesting, the Gemara says, that makes a note of the fact that Haman himself set up the tree that he was hanged from, which is true physically, but it's also true legally. He established the legal infrastructure which ultimately killed him, and that's part of the Hashevoso, Lo Gemula, Arosho, everything that goes against Mordechai comes back on Haman, and these are some of the Yesodos of the first Perek, and as we see, there's so much background that makes a difference for the entire Megillas Esther and the Perek Aleph and Beis. They give us that background, and they really give further insight and appreciation for the later Brachim when we get to what is known as the story of Purim itself. We'll leave it there.